Good to see everyone here this evening and this afternoon Bible study and worship service. I appreciate so very much Bradley leading these songs, and throughout the week in our morning services, the young men have done a great job in leading, and I appreciate the fact that you use your young men in the public worship, and I know that's by design. You work at that, and over the years, I've seen different groups of young men come. And they've always been used. And every time I come here, I enjoy viewing that and experiencing that. I'm also thankful for the building being presented every worship service. I know I saw people working afterwards, but one thing I saw is that I went to the restroom one day and the towels were out, and the next service it was done. I don't know who does that, but it didn't get done. I didn't do anything about it. So it would just keep there. But, you know, no one does anything about it, then you wouldn't have that. But it shows that you're on the ball. Who's ever responsible for that gets things done. And I appreciate that very much. And the fact that your work here is serious to you. And I think that speaks of the eldership. It speaks about Adonis and his work that he does. And we're looking forward to having Adonis. I want to thank you in advance for allowing him to come to Texas in the fall. We're looking forward to having him this fall, Lord willing. I know he'll do us a lot of good. So I thank you in advance for letting him go when he's supposed to go. And we're going to make sure the dates are just right, too. We're not going to mess that up at all. We've had enough of that, haven't we? But it's good to be with you this week. And I always look forward to coming and to being with you. And I've been able to see new faces. I know you're growing. I know you're growing spiritually. But I just appreciate so very much your stand for the gospel, your willingness to hear the gospel presented distinctively. And what I mean by that is that we're not just telling, you know, speaking of the principles and letting you let it go, but we make application. We make specific application in our lives. And we'll try to do that this afternoon as well. But it's been a great week. And of course, you know, I would be treated well at Rick and Barbara's house. I've never had a bigger office than I've had this week. I mean, I could run around and play foosball if I want to. I know I don't have that in my office. But having a good place to sleep, the restroom there, all the facilities there, and it's just been a comfortable place to be. And I sent a picture of the snow today to my wife, and she said, "That's beautiful," but I didn't tell her what the temperature was. You know, it looks beautiful, but once you get out there, I don't think I've experienced 7 and 9 degrees, at least in a long time. So it is invigorating, to say the least. But I don't know. I'll probably be sweating when I get home. I don't know. But I just appreciate all the things. You've treated me very well. I've eaten well. All the food's delicious. And this afternoon, you get a variety of all those things. Someone asked me, "You're going to preach on gluttony?" I said, "I dare not. I'd have to come forward too if you're going to consider that." But we can eat in a variety without being a glutton. So I don't think we committed that today. But it was very good. So thank you for the week, and I trust that you'll continue to stand by the Word of God. And I know with your leadership, and I know with the preaching of Adonis, you'll do that. And I wish you to grow in the faith and to grow stronger and be united with one another. And that's exactly the way we should live. Tonight, I'm speaking about something that's very distinctive in the Christian life, and that is giving. In Ephesians, the 4th chapter, in verse 28, the Apostle Paul gives a lot of specific instructions of demands of how people should live. And in verse 28, it says, "Let him that stole steal no more, but rather let him labor, working with his hands the thing that is good, that he may have whereof to give to him that hath need." Now, when you think about the giving, you can have things by stealing, or you can have things by working. To have things, you can get that in those two ways. And we realize that that's true, but in the life of a Christian, what we have, we are working in order to give. We're working with our hands that which is honorable, so that we'll have something to give. That's our connection with working. And the thief doesn't want to do that. I'm going to have for myself. And therefore, you know, that makes it different. We're talking about what is the life of a Christian. But I want us to see this. The old man in this passage, think about these people are Christians, used to be thieves. At least some of them. Let him that stole steal no more. And so that's the old man. He was stealing because covetousness, because of greed. That's what he wanted, and therefore he stole it. But you can be a law-abiding citizen in this country and in the areas where you live. You can work because you're driven by greed as well. Nobody's going to put you in jail for that. You can work honorable jobs, but the motive was not to give. The motive is to still have. And therefore, you could be law-abiding, but that's not the Christian. The Christian is the one that works that which is good, that is honorable, it is beneficial. So he puts forth that effort in order to have, but it's not idea of greed, is it? It's not a have wants and more. I have that to give to him that hath need. That's strictly Christian. That's the mindset that we're looking at as the child of God. And therefore, I think it's good to explore that. And what it is, it's based upon the renewed mind. And that's behind the right kind of giving. Look at these instructions. Put away falsehood, verse 25. Don't you be angry. Be angry and sin not. Don't let the sun go down on your wrath. Don't have that wrong kind of anger. We see steal no more than verse 29. Let no corrupt speech proceed out of your mouth. These are demands. Tell the truth. Don't have the wrong type of anger. Don't let corrupt speech come out of your mouth. You can command all day. But what's behind this? What's behind this is verse 23. That ye be renewed in the spirit of your mind and put on the new man, that after God hath been created in righteousness and holiness of truth. We're not going to succeed in fulfilling these commands until we have a renewed mind. That's based upon the truth of God. It separates us from the world. And therefore, with that renewed mind, we can give properly. We can work with a mindset, I want to give to him that hath need. It's not out of greed. It's out of a renewed mind. And so I want to have that renewed mind brought to our attention again this evening. Because with that renewed mind, when we preach on giving, you will do that because of the mindset. Just giving a command won't accomplish it. It might make people feel bad. It might make people do something about it for a while. But it's not what's going to continue. And I want to have something that continues out of this thought of giving with this renewed mind. So what we're going to do, we're going to look at the wrong kind of giving. Because you can sure give. And we're going to go to 2 Corinthians, the ninth chapter. And please observe the wrong kind of giving. That you can give with the wrong mindset. Verse 5. I thought it necessary, therefore, to entreat the brethren. This is the collection for the saints in Jerusalem. That they would go before unto you and make up beforehand your aforepromised bounty. That the same might be ready as a matter of bounty. And not of extortion. Your footnote in your Bibles will say covetousness. So it's not bounty, and we'll discuss that, but it's out of covetousness. It's out of my desire to want it for me, maybe, and to want more. That's the wrong type of giving to come out of covetousness. And so that's wrong. Now look at verse 6. And he gets to the illustration of planting seed in a crop. So he that soweth sparingly shall also reap sparingly. But he that soweth bountifully shall also reap bountifully. What is sparingly? It's holding back. You spare someone grief, you hold back that which would cause grief. You want to spare someone's their life, you're going to save that life. You're always holding back when you give sparingly. And when you're sowing seed sparingly, we get the point, you're going to reap sparingly. But that's the wrong kind of gift. You can give. You can give out of a heart that's, I'm holding back. And we need to hold back some. Mildred, we got a faucet that broke. I know you're going to give 20, but we better give 18 today. Or we better give 2 today. Faucet costs more than that, doesn't it? I'm holding back. You're not giving in the sense of what God would have us to do. He says, I don't want you to give out of a heart that's sparingly holding back. What about grudgingly and of necessity? He wants us to be a cheerful giver. He says, he that purposes his heart not grudgingly or of necessity. Grudgingly means it's painful. It's something that hurts. I've got to do it. It's necessarily so. Got to go to the dentist. I'm going to have to sit in that chair. And it's going to hurt. You're going, but it's painful. You give, but it's painful. It's the wrong type of giving. That's when you're giving, but you haven't had a renewed mind yet. And Apostle Paul gives us those contrasts because it's possible to give exactly that way. What's the idea of covetousness? It's about yourself. Luke 12:15, great passage. That your life does not consist of the abundance of the things that you possess. Why would Jesus speak about that? Because you got a lot of people that are greedy for gain. Well, it may be, but here was a case where a fellow said, tell my brother to split the inheritance with us. Anything wrong with that? No, it happens all the time. It has its rightful place. It's legal. And it's right. It's just. But Jesus is warning him in the sense of wanting what's mine. He warns him about abundance of things. That's not what life is about. Covetousness, it's about yourself. And if you don't think it's about yourself, look at the parable Jesus gave. A certain rich man. Notice it was the ground of a certain rich man. Who's over that ground? Well, he may have added some stuff to it, but it's God's ground. It's God's law that's going to produce a crop. But he says, it's my grain. It's my goods. I'll tear down barns, build greater ones, and I'll put my grain in my goods. It's about me. And Jesus is showing that about covetousness. And what's the point of that parable? That, well, you may die tonight. And who's your stuff going to be? Don't you have abundance of things? And who's that going to belong to? And that's the point. Who's going to get what you have left? You're not taking it with you. But the point of this parable, this is those who are rich toward self and not toward God. Did you get that? Rich toward self, my goods, my grain, it's about me, I'm growing, this is what I've accomplished, and it's mine. And it's not rich toward God. Covetousness robs us of our service unto God and what belongs to Him. So don't give, you know, give bountifully in the sense that you recognize it as a blessing from God. Not something you've done, but you've been blessed by God. And you realize it's about Him. That's going to cut out this idea about covetous. What, God, would you have me to do with what you blessed me with? Give to him that hath need. Look at it that way. It's not about me who wants. It's him that has need. And this is being rich toward God. What about holding back? I think we've got a great example of that in the Bible. In Acts the 5th chapter, 1 through 11. And I want you, let's look at chapter 4 in verse 37 before chapter 5 in verse 1. Because we got a man here by the name of Barnabas. He had a field. He sold it and brought the money and laid it at the apostles' feet. Now, it just, here's what he did. Got a field, sold it, brought it to them. But contrast. Here is Ananias and Sapphira. What do? They sold a possession and kept back part of the price. His wife also being privy to it, they said it was planned. And brought a certain part and laid it at the apostles' feet. Now, the problem is they act like we're like Barnabas. We like to be like Barnabas. And look what Barnabas did, and now here's what we're doing, and we've already agreed, well, we're going to look like Barnabas, but we're going to hold back. And holding back, they wanted to look like that, so they lied. They're not lying to Peter, are they? They're lying to God, because they lied to the Holy Spirit. And we find that God killed Ananias immediately. When the wife comes in, she has her opportunity to tell the truth, and she goes along with the plan. She dies immediately. Now, there's an example of holding back. Added to that is lying. But there's something wrong in their heart. They wanted to have something left, but they sure wanted to look good. They wanted to look like Barnabas. I've often thought, in that local church, if Ananias and Sapphira came forward and confessed covetousness, said, we're not like Barnabas. He just gets it, set, you know, he sold it, here's the price, give it. And if they confessed their sin of covetousness, and we could pray for them, that would have been a lot better route than going the way they did, isn't it? Because we're not perfect. There may be some of that old man in us. We have to renew our mind. But here was a case where they're not going to be up front with that and said, this is where I am now. I like to be where Barnabas is. Brethren, help me get here. I've never had one publicly confess the sin of covetousness. But it's in the heart of men, and it comes out in our giving or our holding back a little bit. Because what happens when that holding back occurs, it's painful. And the Apostle Paul spoke about in another case where he's wanting Philemon to accept Onesimus, a runaway slave that's been a help to Paul. But he says, I'm sending him back to you that your goodness, the motive behind your goodness, would be that of free will, not of necessity. I've got to do it because Paul says so. He wanted to be his free will. And when we give grudgingly or out of necessity, that's the wrong type of giving. It's supposed to be free. Free from these mindsets of covetousness. It's painful. I'm giving because I'm holding back. That's the whole attitude about it. You know, I'm just barely getting it out there because I'm holding back so much. Paul said that's the wrong type of giving. But brother, you can give that way, and people may never know it. It's a private thing. I give as I have prospered. But I want to speak to your heart this evening. He said, that's a possibility, but that's the wrong kind of giving. That's not Christian giving. That's not giving out of the renewed heart. And that's what we should strive for. Now, what is the right kind of giving? Go back to 2 Corinthians 9 and verse 5. We want to give in the right way. And so what do we see here in that verse? We see that it would be that bounty, and that bounty means blessing. I think a bounty is being abundance, being a lot. But the word really necessitates, notes blessing, and that gets us on the right track. God has blessed us, maybe with abundance, but God has blessed us. I'm looking at what God has done. And so this is what he has done. I'm looking at it as a blessing from God. And it's from God, it's not about me, it's about what God has blessed me with. And that's a great place to be. It's a blessing. I'm going to share it. It's not mine, I worked so hard, it's my grain, my goods, and therefore it's mine, and I'll give holding back and it painful. That's the wrong kind. But it's a blessing from God that starts there. He's the one, it's his ground. He's the one that sends the rain. He's the one that's brought his laws together As we saw this morning, the idea of juice and the grape juice and the vineyard, all of those things, that's God. And so we recognize it at that. And then we go and realize, well, what should be my next step? Imagine this. You are giving liberally, abundance, because your heart's single. Put those two together. That's a very important principle. Because the word liberality, we're again saying, like we did with bounty, it's abundance. But liberal in these verses, turn to 2 Corinthians 9 and verse 11, ye being enriched in everything unto all liberality. We say, oh, they're just giving a bunch. But the word denotes singleness, which worketh through us thanksgiving to God. And then in verse 13, seeing that through the proving of you by this ministration, they glorify God for the obedience of your confession unto the gospel of Christ and for the liberality of your contribution unto them and unto all. He said, well, they gave a lot. They gave singly. That's what the word means. Now, how can that be a lot? It's because your mind is not distracted. Hold back, Mildred. No, it's God. And He's blessed us. And my eye is single on Him and on His truth, renewed mind. I work to give, so I work to have, so I can give. Not covetousness. It's not in your heart. That's not part of the giving. And so we begin to see the singleness of mind. Now let's see it in an example here. 2 Corinthians 8, same contribution issue. But we're now in the churches of Macedonia. And he brags on Macedonia to Corinth. He brags on Corinth to Macedonia. But here's what he says about Macedonia. How then much proof of affliction? They were undergoing persecution and difficulty. The abundance of their joy and their deep poverty abounded unto the riches of their liberality. If you're only thinking about abundance, how can you get abundance out of poverty? Strictly abundance? How do you do that out of poverty? You can't. That's not what, it doesn't work, does it? Don't have anything. I'm poor. They gave liberally. Because the focus is what we see in verse 5. And this not as we hoped, but they first gave their own selves to the Lord and to us through the will of God. Did you notice how single their heart is? It's the will of God. Is that what He's bringing you here to take this contribution, take it over there to the leading saints in Jerusalem? We're going to be a part of that. We don't have anything. We're in a lot of affliction. But the joy, does that sound like they gave grudgingly? They're poor. And they gave more than Paul thought they would, because they gave out of poverty, but they gave out of singularity of their mind, that it was all devoted to God. And when you have a single heart, you're going to have liberal giving. And it will be fulfilling not only the singleness unto God, but you will probably find a lot more money given because of that singleness of heart. And that's what we saw with these brethren, that they're poor, but they gave with joy and they gave liberally out of that singleness of heart. When your heart gets distracted, what's mine? What's over here belongs to me and all the situation. I'm getting and I've got to hold back a little bit. That's the wrong track. God's blessed me. I may not have a lot, but I'm what is God's will? I'm going to do that. And then you'll be surprised how much you give. The cheerful giver, it's not one that's full of pain. It's not going to come grudgingly. But he said, God loveth a cheerful giver and not the one who gives that way. So how can you be a cheerful giver? Well, you'll notice when he says that in verse 7, he takes us now to verse 8, and this is the track that we're on. It's God who blesses me. God is able to make all grace abound unto you. that ye having always all sufficiency in everything may abound unto every good work. God is able to make all grace abound unto you. Yeah, it's bounty. It's blessing. That's what he's given you. Now you're able to cheerfully give it because you realize it's a blessing from God. You're beginning to be a conduit. God's blessing, I give. God's blessing, I give. There's nothing, it's singleness of heart. And then we read verse 9. He has scattered abroad. He hath given to the poor. His righteousness abideth forever. If I were to ask you to take a piece of paper tonight and answer this question, is he speaking about God or is he speaking about man in that verse? What would you write? Look at that. Righteousness endureth forever. He giveth to the poor. I might say God. And you'd be wrong. The passage he takes, I say wrong with an asterisk, okay? Look at the passage, Psalm 112. And this will bring it back to God. But in Psalm 112, when I go up to verse 7, he shall not be afraid of evil tidings. Who's that? God? It's man. His heart is fixed. God? No, this man's trusting in God. He trusts in Jehovah. His heart is established. And then in verse 9, he hath dispersed. He hath given to the needy. That's you and me, dear brother and sister. It's not God. His righteousness endureth forever. His horn, his strength shall be exalted with honor because look at the righteous deed he is doing. Now, does God have a part in this? Yes, but it's a cheerful giver. He realized God has blessed me, bounty. My heart is single on God and doing that which is right in his sight. And he wants me to work honorably to get and so I can give. And here is his will. Got some saints over here in Jerusalem. They're Jews. That's their background. But you Gentiles, I'm asking you to give. And the people with poverty over Macedonia with joy in their heart under affliction, they give liberally out of a single hearted mind. And he's getting the Corinthians to do the same thing. And what's the plan? God's blessed me. I have to give. No other thing. That's single-mindedness. And I'm the one that feeds the poor. I'm the one that's doing what's right. Because God gives you grace, sufficient grace, so you can abound in good works. That's the way it's going. God's blessed me. I'm a little conduit. And I'm out to give. And therefore, I can abound in good works of righteousness. That's me in Psalm 112 and verse 9. That's you recognizing God's place. Now, let's make an application and the lesson will be yours. With a renewed mind, we're going to look at prospering different from a lot of people will. Well, the people of the world won't look at it this way. Prospering will be from a principle God has blessed me, not the bottom line profit. That's the way we think sometimes. I make so much money. We've got to do this. We've got to have this. Got to have this. Got to have that. And what's left over that is prospering, God. Thank you. And that, I'll give a portion of that to you. And what happens sometimes is that when more expenses come because of your wants, maybe not necessarily your needs, that you'll begin to hold back. It'll be a little more difficult to give, maybe grudgingly, out of necessity. And you're distracted, so you're not giving liberally. And we've seen in 1 Corinthians 16, 1 and 2, give as you prospered. God's blessed me. There it is. Mildred, I know you usually give 20. Why? Because God's blessed me. Hold back 18 today. So she's giving, holding back. Did he bless her before they had the pipes break or need a faucet? We're looking at, God, you bless me, and I will take what is honorable to you off the top. And I may have to give up a few of my wants, but I know that you'll always provide for my needs, my food and my covering, if I will seek you first in your righteousness. And her face says, I know you'll take care of me, but you bless me, you bless me more, I'll give more. That's the renewed mind. But I think a lot of people look at it, I don't have a lot to give today. Well, examine why you don't. People gave out of poverty, and they gave liberally. Minds were single. And we need to be giving that way. We'll look at giving as a conduit for God's steady flow of blessing. That's the best way I could describe it. God's blessing, bounty, and all the things involved that I work to have so I can give. And we've got to take care of our family. I'm not excluding that, but sometimes that gets to be in our profit loss statement. And a lot of that is what we want. Maybe not necessarily what we need. And we'll not be forced to give. You know, sometimes sermons are preached on giving because people are not giving, and maybe there's a more need for the church to have money to support preachers, different places or locally. And it's not there, and so we'll give sermons on giving. And it's almost like we're forcing brethren to have to give. And I ask you, is that the idea of a cheerful giver? A cheerful giver is always ready to give. What you need, brethren, we'll meet it. And I think most of us, I know young people, you know what a computer is, and you know what a prompt is. And I see that thing. It's there. And I try to find it sometime, and I'm looking for it. What's the prompt? What is it called, a prompt there? That little arrow there. It is there prompting you that I'm ready to do something. You're a little slow today. I'm already here. Where do you want me to go? You want me to go up here and punch on it? Get busy. The prompt is the cheerful giver. His mind is single. I've got one job to do. I'm going to bless, God's blessed me. I'm going to do his will. And it's going to be in this involved in giving. And it's the prompt that says, I'm ready. We'll find a way to meet that. I may be under affliction. I may not have anything, but I'm going to give liberally and with joy. Why? Because I'm ready. Cheerful giver is always ready. That's why I don't think you have to force people when they have a renewed mind to be giving as they should. And then finally, the point, how do you lay up treasures in heaven? How do you do that? Is it going to be a different type of currency? You take this money and you convert it to some other type of currency up there in heaven that's been stored for you? I think what we see in Scripture is that we're able to turn our earthly treasures into spiritual realities that glorify God. It's the way that heaven will be for us. We're putting treasures in heaven because we're changing our money and our resources to good works. 2 Corinthians 9, please go there with me. In verse 15, let's notice what this contribution is being converted to. He that supplies seed to the sower, bread for the food, shall supply and multiply your seed for sowing. Again, God's blessing, I'm a conduit, I'm giving. Same principle all through this. And increase the fruits of your righteousness. See, I'm the giver. Psalm 112. What has happened? Fruits of your righteousness. It's no longer money. It's fruits of righteousness. It's been converted. We continue. being enriched in everything unto all liberality, which worketh through us thanksgiving to God. For the ministration of this service not only filleth up the measure of the wants of the saints, but aboundeth also through many thanksgivings unto God. Prayer unto God. Thank you, God, for your blessing. How'd you get it? Macedonia and the people here in Corinth, they blessed us with their bounty from you. We thank you, oh God. Isn't that good? God gets blessed. He gets thanked because you turned some money into many thanksgivings unto God. And then he says, for the ministration of verse 13, seeing that through the proven of you by this ministration, they glorify God for the obedience of your confession unto the gospel of Christ, and for the liberality of your contribution unto them and unto all. It had a manner of obeying the gospel. How? The gospel message is that all men need to come to God. And now I'll make of them one new man. And they'll be not Jew and Gentile, male and female, bond or free. We're all one man in Christ Jesus. And that was the message of the gospel. And here was a time to prove that. Because you've got some Jews over here that need help. They're Christians now. And you've got some Gentiles over here that can give help at this time. And they're Christians. And we're going to show, do you really believe the gospel message? I tell you, when you really believe something and it affects your pocketbook, you're going to prove something one way or the other. They say, yeah, we're one man. We're Christians. And what you did, what these people did, it showed obedience to the gospel and the confession of what that gospel was all about. And then when he says in verse 15, thanks be to God for his unspeakable gift. I saw that on a sign of a Church of Christ building celebrating Christmas. Thank God for his unspeakable gift. And he says he's talking about Jesus. What's he talking about? God's bounty and people's liberal focus, singleness upon him. God, you're the one that renewed such a mind for this unspeakable gift, the contribution that was given to him. Thank God for this. Because it wasn't me forcing it. It wasn't me browbeating people. It was people having a renewed mind. And that's what we want to strive for. And when you might get a little holding back, review what a renewed mind giver is all about. And I think you want to do right. You will do that. Now, let's see how this works in 1 Timothy. Because Paul addresses, in the context where he addresses people, the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. It will take you away from the faith, pierce yourself through with many sorrows. But he's speaking of people who desire to be rich. Those are probably a lot of poor people. But now he speaks to the rich. Charge them that are rich in this present world that they be not high-minded. People with money, they think they're better than other people. It's the way it goes. And they're high-minded and they think more highly of themselves because they have much more. You know, I've been blessed because I know more, talented and so forth. And that's the danger. Nor have their hopes set on the uncertainty of riches, but on God, who giveth us richly all things to enjoy, bounty for everything. Now, what are you supposed to do? That they do good. Yeah. Good works over in 2 Corinthians 9. That they be rich in good works. Yeah. That's why we change this money into good works, that they be ready to distribute, willing to communicate, laying up for themselves a good foundation against the time to come, that they may lay hold on the life which is the life indeed. I just sent my treasures in heaven because I'm giving, I'm sharing. I'm willing. To me, that's the picture of the Christian giver in 2 Corinthians 9. And that's the picture of a giver. He has, she has money. It's not bad to have money. Not evil to have money. And the rich have a lot of things they have to deal with. But right here, that they're the givers. They're the ones that use it correctly. As a bounty, a blessing from God, a conduit to send it away. And finally, you know, we can pray for people's physical well-being. I know there's some brethren that think you can only pray for people's spiritual blessings. I've had a man and went to the hospital, and he was an elder of the church, and he had this belief that you couldn't pray for physical blessings. I thought about daily bread. It's kind of a blessing. But he believed that, and so I didn't know that at the time, and we had prayer, and I knew it was bothering him because he was sick in the hospital. He told me that. And I thought about this passage since then. Beloved, verse 2, I pray that in all things thou mayest prosper and be in good health. Even as thy soul prospereth. There's your spiritual side. What's this other side? Prosper and be in good health. Did you notice I say, beloved, I pray? That was the kicker. In his Bible, it says he wishes. He said, that's not prayer. I ask you, what can you wish for in the Lord that you can't pray for? What can you wish for that you can't pray for? If it's in the Lord. This is in the Lord. But what it comes down to, if God answered this prayer for you, somebody prayed for you, and God's going to answer this prayer, how rich would you be tomorrow? Because you're only going to prosper as your soul is prospering. Would you have a lot? Or would you have very little? Because your soul's not prospering at all. There's the right kind of giver. There's the one that God just keeps blessing because they keep giving. I'm a conduit. And it's not selfishness, and we're taking care of our needs, but I'm ready to give. What's the need? I'm here to help. God blesses those people. And if that prayer were answered, how rich would you be tomorrow if you're going to prosper as your soul prospers? That takes away the covetousness and the greediness, because that soul is alive and prospering. He'll bless you. And I just think giving is a strictly an element of Christianity that's so set apart from the world. And sometimes we come to our giving as a profit loss statement. And at the end, when we've got all of our wants and our needs satisfied, maybe we have to put up because we got the future ahead of us. God, you get the rest of it. When he ought to get the first of it, the first fruits, the best. And I hope that that will help us when we do our private thinking and what we do as individuals and as a family. All he said, give as you prosper. He didn't put a percentage on that. But I hope now you'll see what the renewed mind does. And brethren, with that renewed mind, are never going to be forced to have to give more. They said, here's our need, and they're ready. And I hope that will be the way we give from now on. Thank you for your kind attention. Thank you for a good week of Bible study and to be able to talk to you and visit with you. If there's someone in this audience that's not a member of the Lord's church, therefore not a Christian, I want to encourage you to become a Christian. If you don't know the gospel yet, get with people who love you and care for you and people in this audience. Sit down and talk to you about your soul and how Jesus Christ has come to save you. But if you believe who he is, you've been thinking about, I need to obey the gospel, do it now. We may not have another opportunity like this to obey the gospel. Because we're on the verge of death all the time. You never know when that can happen. And if you are at that state, we want to encourage and exhort you. Come, there's a fountain free. God freely gave so you could live. Why not take advantage of that? Come to him in obedience to the gospel. Let us hear your confession before many people that he's the Son of God. We'll baptize you into Christ, and you'll leave this audience this evening justified, a child of God. We encourage you to obey the gospel now as we stand and as we sing.